KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, Dustin Lance Black, the LGBTQ activist who wrote the Oscar-winning screenplay for Milk on the life of Harvey Milk, has a new memoir. Titled Mama's Boy, it's about his close relationship with his mother, who was conservative, Southern, Mormon, and worked for the military, and he was terrified to come out to her as gay. We'll talk with Black about how they bridged their differences and found their way together to a higher plane than politics. That's next on Forum, after this news. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Oscar winner and activist Dustin Lance Black wrote the screenplay for the celebrated 2008 film Milk. He produced the documentary series When We Rise, and he was instrumental in the fight to overturn California's ban on same-sex marriage, Proposition 8. But before all those achievements, Black says he was a shy and fearful kid growing up in East Texas who realized at age 6 that he was gay. And though he adored his devout Mormon mom, he saw no way of coming out to her. It is their story of love and connection through their differences that he tells in his new memoir, Mama's Boy, a story from our Americas. Dustin Lance Black, welcome to Forum.
Oh, thank you for having me. I feel like it was just yesterday we were together.
Yes, it was. It's great to have you.
But it was the day before yesterday.
Well, it's great to have you on the show after such a fun conversation with you at the Commonwealth Club on Wednesday.
And wonderful.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk with you about, and now we have an opportunity for listeners to come in and ask questions, which is the wonderful thing about Forum. And also right. On the Friday just before Mother's Day, at about a book that really is a tribute to your mother.
I keep saying that I'm a supporting character in this book. It's some folks call it a memoir, but it's really more the story of my grandmother and then my mother and the inheritance that I got from them. I feel it's their story more than mine in a way.
And that was one thing that I was struck by, and I guess it makes sense given the fact that you really do like to do biography of others,
yes.
For example, with Milk. But you do spend quite a bit of time sharing your mother's story as well as your grandmother's story before you come into this book at all. And they were both very extraordinary women. Can you talk about your grandmother, Cokie, a little bit and how you were able to write her, even though you had barely met her, I think, or
I had never
met her.
She
yes.
passed away just before I was born. And she was a single mother of 9 living on the south side of the river in Lake Providence, Louisiana, which often wins the prize for the poorest city in America with the largest income disparity. And so if you have money, you live north of the river and you send your kids to private schools that, let's be honest, is just an extension of segregation. If you have no money, you live south of the river, and it's mostly African-American families on tenant farms. And that's where you find my grandmother raising these 9 kids by herself. And pretty soon she has a new daughter who's 2 years old when she starts to fall quite ill from polio and is unable to walk. And it's really just a testament to this thing that's in my family's blood that whenever we hear that something is not possible, we like to prove it wrong. And I get that from my grandmother, Cokie, who raised these 9 kids mostly on her own. And when her daughter could no longer move her legs, and the doctors all said, well, your life will be very different. You probably won't fall in love. You definitely can't have children or hold a job. My grandma, Cokie, said, bull, that's not how we are in our family. And taught her daughter, my mother, that she could walk on crutches and braces and stand with the rest of her brothers and sisters, and that, heck, she could fall in love and get married one day and have kids, even though the doctors were all saying it was impossible. And my mom believed her. And I'm proof that the impossible is possible.
What
and
do you
that's
mean?
The inheritance. Well,
mean just the fact that she had you?
Yeah. She did like to remind me, particularly when I didn't do my chores, that she died on the operating table, which she did. She went into cardiac arrest.
Your mother.
She was not supposed to be having children. Yes, my mother. And that guilt trip sometimes worked, but it was true. She was not in any kind of physical condition to be having children, and she had three. And so I had to start with them. So you understood that. I also needed to start with them because this is a story about how we bridge political divides. And I needed people to understand why my grandmother and my mother were so conservative, where that came from, what it's built upon, why my mom decided to convert to Mormonism, why she found hope in that, and why she found stability in working for the U.S. Army and in conservatism and in the Republican Party, because she eventually gives birth to me, and I'm not conservative. Yeah. And I went to film school instead of going on a Mormon mission.
It's interesting that you say that, because one of the thoughts that I had when I read your book was whether or not you had spent all this time giving us a real in-depth look at your mother and your grandmother so that we wouldn't judge your mother too harshly when she did respond in a way that was disappointing to you when you came out.
Yeah. I think the reader needed to understand where devout Mormonism and conservatism, how that provides hope for some people. I mean, certainly when my mother was in a children's hospital in New Orleans and they were wheeling her into surgeries that she didn't understand what they were about and cutting her open repeatedly month after month.
Your grandmother had never even consented to or even knew really were happening.
That's how it used to happen. And she almost died on those operating tables. And then these very cute boys with these ironed shirts and these black slacks and these little name badges that said elder this or elder that came into the hospital and started talking to her about this new faith, relatively new faith, that would promise that she could have a family, and not just a family, but an eternal family and a perfect body in the afterlife. And these young Mormon men converted my mother. And a couple of years later, she met another very cute missionary boy who married her. I mean, she drew great hope from this faith. She grew great stability from the family values she found in the Republican Party at the time. And I think we need to understand that in a personal way, not a political way, to understand her reaction to discovering I was gay. I did not come out to her. She yeah. found out. She figured it out. And that reaction was not a positive one.
Yes.
But I think...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I think also in sort of understanding where her conservatism comes from, by understanding it in a personal way, it also starts to make sense why we were able to find common ground, something that seems so impossible these days. Because we kept it personal, because I understood where she was coming from, because I took the time to... And because she was courageous enough and curious enough to actually get on a plane and come out to California and meet my gay friends, we actually came to some understanding. It seems like such an impossibility these days for people who are very different politically to do that, but we did.
And I want to talk a little bit more about that. But first, can you talk a little bit about what her views were on homosexuality before she realized that you were gay? And we can talk also more about that experience of when she realized that and how you kind of inadvertently came out to her. But yeah. What were her views, and what was it like growing up for you in San Antonio, Texas, in the late 70s and 80s? Where you essentially were having it drilled into you on a regular basis how bad being gay was.
Sure. I mean, the Mormon prophet at the time, Spencer W. Kimball, was beamed into all the churches around the country that had a satellite dish, and he compared in a speech homosexuality to being a murderer. Now, at 6 years old, I already knew I had a crush on the boy down the street. And because I was in Texas, because I was surrounded by military folks and in the state of Texas itself, and had heard that in church on one fine Sunday, I knew what I was. I had a name for it. I also knew that I was in deep trouble. I knew that I'd bring shame to my family and myself if anyone found out. I knew that there existed things like conversion therapy, electroshock therapy, and that was scary. I knew I was a criminal. I certainly knew I was not welcome at all in the U.S. military. My mom loved so much. And it was just hard. It's not a unique story. It's a story that still goes on today. You take that moment that a little one is first starting to experience love and the butterflies of a crush, and for a moment those might exist before they're taken over by terror of arrest, of hell, and of very real things like conversion therapy. And I lived in silence for many years after that. I really stopped talking outside of the home just to try and hide and not be discovered. And it took about a decade and a half before my mom figured it out. And that did not go well.
So go ahead and share that story, or however much you'd like to of it. It's a very powerful moment in your book.
Well, I was home for Christmas, and I'd come out already back in California, but I certainly wasn't out to my mom. I didn't want to be. I thought I would lose her, and I didn't want to. My mom was my most precious thing in the world. And I just remember her coming into my bedroom late at night, because I was going to fly out very soon after Christmas just so that I wouldn't get discovered. And she starts talking about don't ask, don't tell. And she's talking about it, not that she's mad because it excludes people, but she thought it was too inclusive. She didn't think that closeted people should be allowed in her military. This was her good military, and these were people she'd learned were sinners and criminals and mentally ill. And because I said nothing, because I wasn't arguing back or debating like I would on other issues, she took my silence as acceptance. And she kept going and going and going. And now I'm out in LA to a select group of friends, and she's talking about my friends. She's talking about me. And I said probably my first prayer in well over a decade to not cry, to not let her figure it out, because I didn't want to lose her. And probably right around that thought, the first tear hit my cheek and the room went absolutely silent. She's a good Southern mother. She had all the Southern mother skills, including being able to read tears like tea leaves. And she knew I never, ever had to say the words. She just looked me in the eyes and said, "Why? Why would you choose this?" And I remember doing this thing that I only ever did once in my life because I knew we weren't supposed to. I looked at her braces on her legs, and I looked at the crutches behind her, and I said, "Why did you choose those?" And it was the beginning of something cracking open, but it certainly wouldn't be solved for some time. And our relationship did suffer for a good long time. But like I said, my mom's tough. And we had no choice in our lives but to figure out the bridges. We were our most precious things. And though we knew at this point we were very different in terms of how we saw the world and politics and the law, we knew from our growing up experience, raising each other, needing each other, we had to find a common ground. And she showed the courage to fly out to California and to meet many of my gay and lesbian friends and to have conversations with them and to listen to their stories. Now, they didn't know my mom was homophobic, so they're telling these stories with an open heart. I never told them my mom didn't accept me. And so she's just sitting there in our apartment the day before my graduation, and my friends are getting drunk on wine, and I'm making pasta in the kitchen, and I'm watching them tell her the stories of missing their own Christmases with their families. This is a early 90s when so many kids were still being kicked out of their home, many coming to Los Angeles because it's warm enough you don't freeze on the streets, if that's where you end up. And they're sharing that. Now, a genteel Southern mother knows not to fight you to your face. She's just nodding and listening. And I'm scared because I think she's just being genteel. And they keep telling their stories and with all the details, including my two lesbian friends teaching my mom how lesbians do it. I got scared. I thought, oh boy. And I'll never forget the moment that I think is up till now defined me as an activist and a storyteller. She patted the seat next to her once my friends were all gone. And I sat next to her, and I could feel the heat radiating off of her. And I could feel the moment she started to tear up, and I thought she was very mad that I had set her up. And instead, she turned to me, and she just held me so tight. And I knew in that moment that my mother, for the first time, loved me for me and every part of me. And how did that happen? It was because my friends didn't know that they were in for a fight, so they didn't come for a fight. They just came with their stories, very personal stories, stories that illuminated all the facts and the science and the law, but they didn't come with the facts and the science and the law that make people dig into their trenches on opposite sides of a political divide. They just told stories, and those stories did start to change my mom's heart. And by changing her heart, by erasing all the misconceptions she'd learned in the Mormon church and in the military, it started to change her mind too. And that was very eye-opening to me, that if we can have those personal conversations around political subjects, there might be a way to find common ground. Not that you're going to agree on everything, but you might find some common ground. That's why I wrote this book, because we're not doing that anymore. We're having political fights about ideas, worthy ideas, but we're forgetting to do the extra step, which is to find the personal story and to show the courage that my mother did to share it.
Yes, and you're
and
also
to hear it.
Talking about people starting from the premise of acceptance, that they're starting from the premise that of openness and open-mindedness to some extent.
Yes.
We're talking with screenwriter, filmmaker, and activist Dustin Lance Black about his book, Mama's Boy, A Story from Our Americas, about Black's experience growing up in a conservative Southern Mormon home in the 70s and 80s with a mother who worked for the military when he realized at age 6 that he was gay. And Mama's Boy shares how they bridge their differences with lessons for our divided America. I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. What questions or comments does Dustin Lance Black's story bring up for you? What experiences with your own mother or a mother figure are Lance Black's stories making you think about? What do you realize about your mom now that you didn't know as an adult? What do you realize about your mom now that you're an adult that you didn't know as a kid? Or what lessons did your mother's life teach you? The number 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. Post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, or post them on Facebook or Twitter at KQED Forum. And Lance Black, one of the things that I'm struck by is how frequently you want to remind the reader. And I'm sorry, is memoir actually not the word that you would use to describe your book?
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't care.
You
People
mentioned
can
earlier
use it.
That it was memoir, and I wondered if it means something else to you.
I think it's, what I worry about with a memoir sometimes is that it's just a skipping stone across history, and this certainly isn't that. This was a book about an idea that I hope it has a purpose. Mm. And it's built around a purpose. That's certainly what I challenge my screenwriting students to do, is to take, yes, a story from history, figure out what it's about, though, not what happens, and how what it's about will affect our future in a positive way. That's what a good story about our past is, not nostalgia. And sometimes memoirs feel like nostalgia. I hope this isn't that. And frankly, to me, the greatest part of this book to me is the last third, where I realized that I had been uncourageous. I hadn't shown the courage and curiosity my mother had. I hadn't been back to Texarkana in well over a decade. I haven't spoken with my childhood church. And by the way, I'm speaking to you from Salt Lake City, Utah right now, where I'm doing this right now. I knew that I needed to do what my mom had done, that this needs to be a two-way street. And so the last third of this book is definitely not memoir as far as I'm concerned. It's about my journey back to Texas. It's about my journey back to Salt Lake City to see if I can have those tough but personal and intimate conversations with people who I know have disagreed with me, have even funded propositions against my marriage, and to see if we could find that common ground my mom was able to find when she came to California. And the results were so surprising, I think. Surprising in how easy they were sometimes, particularly in the South, where you can drink more whiskey than you can here in Salt Lake City. but also, it just dispelled so many of the myths around how important and definitive our political sort of affiliations are. Those started to fall apart once you're sitting across the dinner table and you're having real conversations. So memoir, somewhat, but I hope it pushes forward. We need to move forward on these issues.
Yes, and the question that I was beginning to ask you there was that repeatedly in your book you do talk about how Southern values made you who you are. And I'm wondering what you mean by Southern values. What are those values?
Well, I think there are many, but I can say for certain, being guided by the Golden Rule and understanding the power of using that, meaning treat your neighbor as you'd like to be treated yourself, was a great way to talk about marriage equality, that we weren't necessarily talking about it in those terms beforehand. We were talking about rights and equality. And that message seemed to resonate more in the South. You know, I think family comes first most everywhere, but it is really primary where I come from in a different way, in the Mormon Church and in the South. And understanding that that's at the core of so many political beliefs, it also meant I felt well-armed to help make the conservative case for marriage equality. And in fact, we ended up hiring Ted Olson to represent our case against Prop 8 to help make that conservative case for marriage equality. Just sort of understanding the language of all of that. But also, and not least at all, I learned from being a good Texan that when a bully picks on you, you do not ask for half of your money back when they steal your lunch money. You demand it all back and you have to be willing to fight for it. That's how you get respect where I'm from. And so I just took a look at the gay movement before Prop 8 in that decade before. And I take a look at it from my Uncle James's perspective. And he's saying, well, why the devil are you asking for just rights in this county and that state? Seems like you got no respect for yourself.
Or just civil unions, I think, even, right?
Yeah. Yes, civil unions instead of marriage. He's like, if you ask for crumbs, you're going to get less. You know, you learn as a Texan to stand up straight and tall and strong, defend yourself, and demand the full thing. And that's what we also started to do in the marriage equality movement, is to be strong enough and bold enough, even in the face of some people who thought we were crazy, to be demanding federal equality. And we demanded the full thing.
We're talking with Dustin Lance Black about his new memoir and his new book, Mama's Boy, A Story from Our Americas. Join us with your questions, comments, stories, anything you'd also like to share about your own mom, given the fact that this is the Friday before Mother's Day. 866-733-6786 is the number. We're also at forum at kqed.org and our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking with Dustin Lance Black, screenwriter, filmmaker, and LGBTQ activist, best known for writing the Oscar-winning screenplay for the film Milk. He also did the docuseries When We Rise, the film J. Edgar, wrote and co-produced HBO's drama Big Love. Black was also instrumental in the fight for marriage equality, and his new memoir, Mama's Boy, shares how his devout Mormon mom's experiences ultimately laid the foundation for him to have the courage to transform from the shy and fearful kid he was who realized he was gay while growing up in the conservative South to the man he is today. And I'd like to invite you, our listeners, to talk with Lance Black. The number is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, on Facebook, Twitter, or on our email address, at our email address, forum@kqed.org. And I'm going to go first to Jimmy in San Francisco. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, Dustin, Nina. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share a little story for you guys. I'm a Bay Area native, and my best friend in high school back in the 90s was the bishop's son. And my mom was having some ups and downs and a little bit of substance abuse problems, so their family kind of took me in. and I didn't want to come out to my friends until he left for college. I couldn't do it face to face, but when I did, he sent me a letter, and he said, no matter what, you're still my friend, you're my best friend, and you have been for years. It's not going to change anything. And his family felt the same, but unfortunately, my mom, she intercepted that letter, and that's how she found out. And she kicked me out of the house, and we've been on rocky road since then. She's a Trump campaign worker, and I haven't talked to her in quite a while, but listening to your story, I just want to thank you for sharing it, and congrats to you, and also big props to your mom. Like, you know, I feel like we as LGBTQ folks, we take a lot of time to come out to ourselves. It's going to take them a little bit longer too, but you bet I'm going to talk to my mom this Mother's Day and see if we can patch things up.
Don't make me start crying on the radio.
I had to pull over just because...
I have to say, we have so much further to go with the Mormon Church to get them to a place of acceptance. I just drove up here from Lehi, which is very, very Mormon, and I'm in Salt Lake City today, and I was having conversations last night with the Mama Dragons, who are a group of Mormon, mostly Mormon moms who want the church to support their gay kids. And it's those sorts of conversations that are happening with the Mormon Church that are starting to break things open, because what I think they're what I know they're starting to realize, because I've had these conversations, is that what acceptance does is protect children and it protects families. That what their stance in the past and still in some ways now has done has driven children away from their families, has driven children out of the home, been kicked out of the home, has driven an incredible amount of young LGBTQ Mormon kids to contemplate, if not attempt, suicide. And that's not what they want. Frankly, that's terrible for the family brand of Mormonism, but it's also just terrible for any faith and for Mormonism. And I'm so heartened that they're willing to have these conversations now. And you can see in the most recent revelations, which aren't, I'm not happy, but I'm heartened. There's further to go, that those conversations are having an effect. And I'm so glad that bishop's son said what he did. That means a lot to me. And I'm also, I send you all of my love and support to open up that conversation with your mom. Listen, I didn't vote for Trump. I can't quite understand it. But I also know that I've met some folks while I was in Texas on this tour and in my family who support me, who support gay people, who support their gay kids, even though they did vote for Trump. I don't understand it, but we can bridge that divide, even a huge one, but we can bridge it.
Well, Jimmy, thanks so much for the call. I'm going to go next to Vienna in Dublin. Hi, Vienna.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to share and thank you so much for discussing the Mormon perspective on this, because I was also raised Mormon. My mother is very devout, and she advocated for Prop 8 back in 2008. And it's been really hard for me, because while I'm fortunate in that, you know, I married a man, so I didn't ever have to confront my mom about the fact that I'm bisexual. It's also been a barrier that I've never been able to be honest with her, because not only that, but I consider myself now an atheist. And I think a lot of people might not understand that Mormons approach this not from a militant perspective. They don't always get angry. They don't always treat you like a pariah, but it is still a deeply existential tragedy for them to hear that their child is no longer affiliating themselves with the church or its beliefs.
Yeah.
And it's something it's so hard, and I can't bring myself to be honest or upfront with her about that. And so I really appreciate what you're saying about how the church is beginning to be a little bit more progressive on this. And I hope that one day I'll be able to tell her about what I really believe. So thank you so much.
Vienna, thank you. One of the things that I was struck by is that the LDS Church for you, Dustin Lance Black, was was a place that really took care of you and took care of your family, especially after your father initially abandoned all of you, you and her three boys, your mother and her three boys. And they really were the people financially, too, who helped you through a very difficult period and in fact, encouraged you not to seek support from the government for various reasons. Yeah. So you had this certain idea of them as saviors, but then you also witnessed the LDS bishop essentially blaming your mother for the breakdown of her own marriage to somebody who was essentially abusive to her.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean when you talk about how you were her protector and that you were raising each other to some extent?
Well, that was one of the many ways that I had to protect her. And I did and do have a complicated, nuanced relationship with my childhood faith. The bishop of our church did fill an envelope each month with cash and put it in our mailbox so that we could survive once until my mom could learn how to drive and get a job. And in that way, and the community came together and really supported us and made us feel loved. And we had Christmas presents under our tree, though we had no money in the bank account. And I'll always be forever grateful to the Mormon Church for that community. At the same time, it's not right to blame the woman of the household for the breakdowns in that home and for the violence that my first stepfather brought into our home. It was not a technically arranged marriage, but it was one that was encouraged because they thought that this man in our church was unmarriable. They thought that my mom, as a paralyzed woman with three kids, was unmarriable, and they put us together. And what we found out quickly was that he was incredibly violent. And I had the bloody noses and the black eyes to prove it. So did my mom. And in fact, at one point, it became a life and death situation, which is in the book. And the church still came to her and said, there's something you're doing in the home that does not suit your priesthood holder or the man of the house. And so when I'm having conversations with the church about LGBT issues, I also have conversations with the church about how it treats women. These are issues that this church has to, it's not alone, by the way, that many faiths have to tackle the treatment of women and LGBT people within the faith. The interesting and perhaps good news about the Mormon Church is it has shown an ability to move and change rapidly. I want to continue having these conversations to create understanding so that they can see how this is actually hurting families to treat women the way they do and LGBT kids the way they do, in hopes of a revelation soon that can make Mormon families safe for their gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender kids and for the matriarchs of these families.
Well, Olivia writes, my girlfriend was never able to come out to her very religious mother before she passed about 5 years ago. I get the sense that however afraid of coming out she was, that my girlfriend regrets not doing it. Is there any way of reconciling those feelings? What can I as a supportive partner do to help her through those feelings?
Well, I understand certainly how difficult it is to come out to a Mormon parent.
And I'm not sure in this case the parent was a Mormon parent. I think in this
it was
her realizing that her girlfriend had not been able to come out to her mom before her mom died.
I mean, that's tough. I can understand because, you know, part of not being able to come out means you're not able to share the most personal parts of who you are. So in a way, you're already losing your family in the ways that matter most by not being able to be authentically yourself. So I get it. I mean, I would just say the best remedy for that is to begin to be courageous enough to be open about who you are with whoever else you have that's close to you now. And understand not just how much better that's going to make you feel, but the power that coming out has. I mean, I'm a student of Harvey Milk, and he was right. Coming out is and doing it in a personal way is the most powerful political thing you can do. It really does change minds. If people know one LGBTQ person, they tend to vote with us. Even if that's not the party or affiliation, if it's not their stance, if they know you, they vote with you for the most part. And so I would say, make it better by starting to come out and being honest about who you are, even when it's difficult.
Well, we're talking with screenwriter, filmmaker, and activist Dustin Lance Black. His new book is Mama's Boy, A Story from Our Americas. And one of the things that that I think really is very clear about your book and your story in many ways is that you feel that the family bond is something that you can use as an example of or as a model for ways to meet anger or bigotry with a certain sense of shared connection and curiosity.
Yeah. I think that it's a fantastic opportunity right now when we are so divided. Certainly it was the starting place for me. It was the first place that I saw that there were signs of danger, that our divisions in this country were getting so heated that it was harming our family. And we were always a very close family, but my mom would call me and I could hear the tears in her voice that she had just gotten off the phone with a sister or a cousin, and that there was a fight or that people weren't speaking to one another. And that these divisions, I think we were learning from politicians and news shows how to have these conversations about politics as if politics was the highest plane of existence, and that whether you put R or D on your voter registration card was the highest plane in this miraculous universe that we live in. And it's absurd, but we were learning it, and we were doing it now in our own homes and in our own conversations with family members. And so that's why I start there now, because I think what I hope this book is by example, and I hope it can encourage other people to do, is to go home again. To go home again physically, if you can, but certainly to go home again, meaning start to have those conversations on that most powerful stage there is in this world. And it's not a movie theater. It's not a stage in a theater. It's the dining room table. And a dining room table with your own family. And see if you can't have these conversations where you try to keep it personal. I don't mean attacking the other person personally. I mean, take that extra beat to think about things like politics and the law and the science of whoever you are and the facts. And take that extra step to figure out what the personal story is you can tell and how this debate has affected you or someone that you love, and share that first.
But don't do it on holidays, you've cautioned.
I say that, but that's what I don't do it on holidays. It's so damn dramatic, but that's what I did. It was Christmas night when I came out and did this. It didn't go well. But I got to say, if you can encourage the person you're sitting across from to keep it personal, and you can do it yourself, and by the way, know you're going to hear things you don't like, that you don't agree with, it's going to be hard sometimes, but keep it in that personal place, you start to find some common ground. It happens. It's sort of magical that when you don't just fight with the facts and the science and the law, people don't dig their trenches deeper. I'll share the quickest of stories, but going back to Texarkana, Texas, and having a meal and a drink with my cousin Lynn, who did not accept gay people or me and had deep problems with it, well, we got the politics out of the way. He said some things about Obama that didn't sound right to me and I don't agree with. But then I started telling him how I'd met this guy in London and we were dating and I was falling so deeply in love, but it was so expensive and it was taking me away from work and I was going to go broke and what was I doing? And he pulled out his phone and showed me his beautiful new girlfriend and started saying, yeah, she makes me take her on these trips and we're going to all these expensive dinners. And I was like, we just did it. He just compared his love to mine. And that was a huge first step. And Lynn came to my book signing in Dallas, Texas, and he posted about it on his Facebook group. And we made a little bit of progress.
Well, this listener tweets, visiting my mom recently, I caught her cowering during a thunderstorm and said, I didn't know you were afraid of thunder. Growing up, we loved storms. And she said, I couldn't let you kids see. She had hidden her fear to keep us secure and happy. And let me go to Anne in Mountain View. Hi, Anne. You have a story about your mom.
Oh, well, I first just wanted to say thank you for bringing love into this discussion. And the thing that I learned from my mom was that relationships are not perfect and people are not perfect and the world is not perfect. I mean, it's really hard. All of those can be really hard. And in the times when she was having trouble forgiving herself for not being perfect, I told her, you know, you are not a perfect person, Mom, but you are a perfect mother. And it was because she taught me that things are not perfect. You have to learn to, you know, to work hard at these things, and that love needs to come first. The second thing I wanted to say is that needs to come into the conversation about faith and politics. And, you know, I think the media could take a little bit of a note from this, because a Pew Research study not that long ago found that, in fact, the politics of people across Christianity and other faiths is not predominantly right-wing, and it is in some parts of Christianity, but not even in all evangelical denominations. And I think there's, I think, a real need to look sometimes at the theological discussions too, because there are even Christian, whole Christian denominations who don't interpret the Bible as condemning gays. So, you know, and that believe that love comes first and so on and so forth, believe that the Bible is pretty strong on creation and things like that. So I think the media really needs to stop also creating the conflict, and maybe what you're saying, to focus on the love and focus on the personal, could really help in the public conversation as well. I just want to last say, I love you, Mom. Thanks for teaching me about life.
And thank you for that. Do you have a reaction?
You're busting me up on this show. I mean, I can't. Oh, that was so beautiful. I can so relate to that mother, who was beating herself up about being a good mom. And when my mom got very, very sick, and we had some real tragedy in my family, my mom started to really blame herself and dissect herself as a mother and break herself down. And it was so hard for me to listen to and to hear, because it didn't compute with the mom that I knew and loved. And we just started saying, I said, Mom, you aren't perfect. You're perfectly imperfect. And we held on to that. That gave us real comfort.
In writing your mother, you knew her so intimately, but yet what surprised you most, or what is something new that you learned about her through the process of writing this book about your relationship with her?
Well, you know, I put this book through the same scrutiny I have any of the biopics that I've done, meaning I did a lot of research, and I also pressure tested my own memory by talking through some of the stories with other people who were there. And that helped keep it true, I hope, and authentic, I hope. It also meant I dug through many of my mom's things. So the mom that I met was a devout Mormon, president of the Relief Society, which is the women's group, and her dress was hemmed like right to the ground. The mom I discovered living in Warm Springs, Georgia, and then a children's hospital in New Orleans, was a mighty flirt. I mean, a real flirt. She kept a journal filled with signatures of the boys who were in, shared her wards over the over a decade that she was in these hospitals, and they're all in love with her. And then I read her letters that she would write to the Catholic priests that would come by, and she was trying to convince them to leave the priesthood and marry her. I mean, my mom was boy crazy, like absolutely boy crazy. And my favorite, I think, is just that she had like a little headshot. So just a little portrait from the shoulders up. And she was gorgeous. You couldn't see that her spine was twisted or that she was in braces and crutches. And I figured out that she was doing the 1960s equivalent of Tinder. She was sending these pictures to boys in Vietnam and asking for their pictures in return. And she would have if they were really cute, she would start up these little pen pal conversations. And she collected all of these incredibly cute boys' pictures in this thing that I've called the Golden Book of Boys. That was, I did not know that mom. I did not know her.
And that's a book that you keep with you. I should remind our listeners that we're talking with Dustin Lance Black. His book is Mama's Boy, A Story from Our Americas. He's the screenwriter, director, producer, and activist who won the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay for the 2008 film Milk. And that this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Mina Kim. And let's go next to Sid in San Francisco. Hi, Sid.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And I just have a comment and a question for the author. First of all, it was really nice that not in the beginning, but later when at that party, your mom heard those stories of gay and lesbian people and she understood and literally, came on the other side of the aisle and she was accepting. But when the author said that we should reach out to the other side of the aisle and talk to the people that don't necessarily agree with you or are okay with the legality of gay marriage and everything, it's extremely difficult these days, especially with the current administration that we have. And I mean, look at what if you just listen to every day what Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying and twisting everything, it's extremely factless. She doesn't believe in the fact, and neither does the whole administration. It's an uphill battle. I mean, I understand, like Michelle Obama said, you have to be hopeful, and hope is the only thing that can lead us to the future. But it's such an impossible thing right now to convince or to even express your opinions or your rights that have been the law of the land, the gay marriage. I don't know how the author expects us to reach out on the other side of the aisle, to the other side of the aisle, and make a conversation.
Sid, thanks. And if I understand you right, Dustin Lance Black, he's saying the differences feel so stark, the divide so wide. Really? Is conversations really all it takes? Lance Black, are you with us? Oh, sorry. I think the mic was down for a second. Now we can.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. I'm back. I say, first and foremost, you have to pick your battles. I'm not saying, not at all, that you can convince everyone or that it will always be effective. And the two people you named, Trump and Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I wouldn't waste my time there. There are people out there, but they are the minority, I believe, who have figured out that they can literally profit or at least gain power by creating division through fear. They've figured that out. It's the oldest game in the playbook. It's the oldest play in the game book. I mean, and, Nero did it. Divide and conquer. When you figure out that you are sitting across from someone like that, dust your heels, as we say in Mormondom. You walk away. You have to, don't waste your time with that. Those are not the people you're going to convert. So don't let Trump trick you into thinking it's impossible, because it's not. He is impossible, most likely. I wouldn't waste a lot of time with someone like him. But that's not most people on the other side of these debates. It truly, deeply isn't. Do not buy into that lie. It is a lie. It is a myth. It is something that 24-hour news channels are teaching us by building panels where it does seem impossible. I say start with your family. Start with your family and your neighbors and, some cousins. Start there and have those personal conversations. And you might be able to change a heart through it. And if you can do that, that will slowly but effectively change a mind. I love hope. I'm with Michelle Obama and Milk on the hope thing, but this isn't about hope. This is hard work. It can be fun work if you're in the South, because you get to have a bit more whiskey than you do here in Salt Lake City. But it is work, and it is going to be hard. You're going to hear some things you don't like. But continue to have the conversation, and I promise you, you're going to find some common ground.
Well, Sid, thank you for the question. Julie writes, my mom is a devout conservative Christian who, in her later years, is suffering from post-polio syndrome. When she divorced my father, she had to come to terms with her own desires. She believes that she's bisexual, but that God helps keep her from a life of sin. As our world becomes accepting of all people, regardless of who they love, I feel gratitude for those who come out and make it possible for my mom to see that no matter what, path people choose, there is love for them in all communities. I think my mom appreciates that this is happening in the world, even if she isn't benefiting from it herself. Lots of, it sounds like a lot of similarities that she felt like she had with you as well in your life, Dustin Lance Black. And we just have a minute left. And I wanted to ask you if, given the fact that this is the Friday before Mother's Day, is there something that you do on Mother's Day, even though your mother has passed away? Is there something that you do on this day to honor her?
Well, I try to remember her. That's how we keep those we've lost alive. We do it that way, and we do it through tradition. And so I never met my grandmother Koki, but I feel like I know her because my mom remembered her on Mother's Days and told me stories. And so every time I take my son down the hall and I point out the picture of my mother, I say, "That's your Grandma Ann." And because I'm happy about it, he giggles now every time he sees her picture and he pats her face. And that's how I'm going to pass on what I learned about love from my mom.
Well, Lance Black, thank you for talking with us and for sharing these stories. I really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank Dustin you. Dustin Lance so much Black's for having book. Me. Yes, it was a pleasure. Dustin Lance Black's book is Mama's Boy, A Story from Our Americas. And congratulations also on your little boy. Have a great weekend, everybody. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.